Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to the Refractive Thinker Radio Show, hosted by the award-winning and international best-selling author, Dr. Cheryl Lentz, the academic entrepreneur. Meet the scholars of the award-winning doctoral anthology series, The Refractive Thinker, where we focus on getting doctoral research off the coffee table and into the hands of business owners who can benefit from the results. Join us each Tuesday morning at 9 a.m. Mountain Standard Time for 30 minutes of thought-provoking radio designed to discuss emerging topics in higher education and business. We will meet today's industry thought leaders and college professors leading the way. Details can be found at www.refractivethinker.com. Now, here's your host, Dr. Cheryl Lentz.
Good morning. This is Dr. Cheryl Lentz, and happy Tuesday morning. Welcome to another broadcast live at Tuesday mornings at 9 a.m. for 30 minutes of thought-provoking radio. We have a wonderful show for you today. We are, as we have continued from a few weeks ago when we started debuting the authors and contributing scholars of the Refractive Thinker Volume 11, Women in Leadership. We have two more of those authors with us this morning to be able to talk about their chapter in this new series that will be out here in a few weeks. The chapter we have is Chapter 8, Innovative Strategies for Women to Overcome Barriers in Pursuing Leadership Roles in Healthcare Organizations, written by Drs. Jennifer Gergis and Dr. Carlos Gergis. So welcome to you both. Are you both here with us this morning?
Yes, we are. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Terrific to have you both with us. As we start each of our radio shows each week, if we want to have our listeners get to know you both for just a little bit. So, Jennifer, tell us a little bit about you so that our listeners can get to know you a little bit about your background and your interest in this topic that you're working with us today.
Yes, thank you. I currently work as a licensed marriage and family therapist. I've been in mental health for a little bit over 10 years. I've been currently working at Kaiser Permanente for about 5 years. And I've held different leadership positions throughout the organization. For example, I provide quality assurance at my current job as part of a review committee that really helps to, you know, create an environment where providers are held accountable, you know, so that everyone continues working in their best ability. And then getting into women leadership, it's a really interesting topic for me. So I was very excited to be part of this project.
Outstanding. Well, we're terrific in having you with us this morning. We look forward to talking more about this. Let's talk with your husband, Carlos. Tell us a little bit about your background, my friend.
So I have 15 plus years in the healthcare field as a senior executive. So I come from the administrative side of things. I have my own consulting company, and I'm also just starting a new data analytics startup to help organizations understand their data, work with it. So to me, this is a passion I'd like to see as a fruition, to see more women in leadership, because currently I don't see it in the higher echelons. And I really look and hope we can use this as a tool to inspire and push more women that, yes, they can be CEOs, CFOs, COOs. It's the only thing holding them back is themselves.
I love it in there. So let's talk about the premise of your research. You both have newly graduated, so we're newly minted doctors here in the DVA program. Tell us a little bit about why you completed your doctorate and what you hope it's going to achieve as a result of this research, and then we'll delve into the research itself. So Jennifer, again, we'll begin with you.
Thank you. So the premise of my research for my dissertation was trying to see the connection between mental health therapists' attitudes on the adoption of evidence-based practices connected with the culture. And then I tied in the changes that are taking place. So EBPs are what we call like empirically tested interventions and procedures that are being implemented probably more so in the last 10 years So there's been a lot of change going on. So my research helped to hopefully support, you know, providers and being heard. And so supervisors, company, you know, the organizations can know what it is that we feel as providers when we are going through these changes. And hopefully my research can facilitate improvements in these mental health organizations. And then tied in with women, you know, being a female provider, it is very crucial, you know, to be able to incorporate us in this changing, you know, process and trying to help and pretty much facilitating all this change that's taking place.
That's certainly been a difficulty and will change yet again with this new presidential election here in the fall. It'll be interesting to see what directions that will have. Carlos, tell us a little bit about your background and your research for your dissertation.
So my research focused on the implications of the Affordable Care Act on community mental health organizations. So it was a top-down approach to look at and see, well, this is a new law, really minted, but not having mental health care organizations participate in the makeup of the law. It was mainly focused on physical health organizations. So, okay, these new healthcare organizations, these mental ones, what are they supposed to do? So it looked at, well, now we have to look at hybrid models. We now have to look at partnering where we never partnered. We have to look at and understand the physical healthcare world, because in mental health, oh, that's, you know, physical healthcare is not to be mentioned. They're the other side. So the research showed, well, we have to look at integration. We have to look at coming to a common understanding that our mutual goal is the patient, and regardless of whatever self-conceived notions we have to move through those and focus on the patient.
Absolutely, and this is very different. We've had a few guests that have been in healthcare on the radio show before, and they have all agreed in this different centric focus in terms of moving from the practitioner and making it far more a patient-centric focus, much the same way education is going through that same transition from being teacher-centric focus to a student-centric focus. So it's a very interesting participative bottom-up rather than a top-down approach, and it's interesting how all these multiple disciplinary approaches have been following a similar pattern. So let's really dig into the research here. Jennifer, we'll again start with you. Tell me about the three top things to take away from your research. Part of what our goal here is to get research off the coffee table and into the hands of people who can actually benefit from your results. So if we look at the top three results, how can our listeners take away from your research and your findings to be able to help improve and move forward in this area?
Well, my recommendations were based on how the mission statement of organizations was tied in to the attitude. So if the providers, as myself, are honing in to what the mission of the organization is, we're going to be on board to participate and be excited about the organization. So that's up to the leaders to make those changes. So leaders have to start listening to kind of where we're all standing as providers and being able to tie that in so that we're pretty much all working as one large team. And ultimately, like what Carlos mentioned, would be to help our patients. Because if we have providers that are on board and happy doing what we do every day, we'll be providing the best service for our patients and ultimately improving patient care. So that's my ultimate goal, is to, you know, make that service the best that we can.
Fantastic in there. Carlos, the same question to you. What are the top three takeaways that we can benefit from the findings that you found from your research?
I think the first one is eliminate organizational biases. Physical healthcare and mental healthcare both have biases towards each other, and that really has no place in the healthcare industry. We all need to understand the values we both bring to the table. Secondly, is we both need to understand our different structures and find hybrid models that can work for the both of us. To look at, for instance, a physical healthcare, a typical encounter could be 15 minutes, whereas for mental health, it's usually 45 to an hour. There's nothing wrong with that, but we all need to understand that's the different models and we need to bridge it. And thirdly, we need to understand that, again, these types of changes can no longer be top-down. They must be bottom-up, meaning, again, the patient to the practitioner to finally the executive suite and all the people in between. So we need to understand that healthcare right now is going through a disruption where it is no longer okay for people just to get the healthcare. We have to have results, and we have to have patients who are happy with the results. So it's now a bottom-up approach.
Terrific. So let's focus on that bottom-up approach in there and the patient advocacy role. What can patients do to be proactive as a result of what you both learned from your research? Jennifer?
Well, currently where I work, they're including our patients. They're part of their treatment, and we try to, you know, empower the patient. If our access is far out, if they're not able to come in to see us, you know, to speak out. They can call membership services. They can be part of the surveys that they get sent out. And I think healthcare organizations are starting to do more of that and trying to include patients to have a voice and say, you know what, this is not what I'm, you know, expecting of my mental health, you know, service. So that eventually it would hopefully be at the same level, if not higher, than where physical health stands right now. Thank you.
Are patients receptive to this adjust in the culture, so to speak?
Well, I think it's still an adjustment period that they're going through at this time, but I can see the change already taking place this last year. And definitely the numbers are increasing. We're seeing a huge change with the Affordable Health Care Act and people being able to have more of a voice as to them driving and being that driving force to their health care, their mental health specifically, and being able to choose, okay, who do I want to go with? You know, oh, yes, Kaiser, they're in the top. Let me go with them as an example. So I'm definitely seeing the change.
Carlos, what do you say from your perspective being in the administrative side of the house?
Well, the administrative side of the house, we're seeing as laws are being passed and legislation and new types of models are coming out, the driving factor is and will continue to be patient involvement and patient satisfaction. The newest healthcare models that the Center for Medicaid and Medi-Cal are coming out with are looking at, well, your reimbursement rates are going to be tied into your patient satisfaction with you. That is a huge disruption to agencies. And frankly, in my opinion, a great disruption that's been severely needed. So at the administrative side, we're doing such measures as we're giving our clinical staff more time towards the end of an encounter session and say, well, take these 10 to 15 minutes and have the client fill out the satisfaction survey. Right? We are also looking at using data. It's a brand new world for these health organizations to use data in a way of, all right, we now need to do data-driven decisions. It's no longer about, well, numbers and finances and, no, it's satisfaction. What can we do? How can we do it? And also we're using new models of, well, we as administration like to drive change, and now we realize we can't. We have to have patient-focused. So some of the newer laws, for instance, around the certified behavioral health clinics that are just being proposed right now, it's very unique where they say 51% of the board of directors must be patients. To administration, that's what? That's a huge disruption, but it's something that is severely needed.
Talk about the measurement of satisfaction, because that's a very difficult, quantifiable, intangible, shall we say, with regard to what most folks might look at is, does one necessarily have to be happy in order to have been cured? Is the process more important than the end result of whatever the mental health care status might be that they've received treatment for a mental health condition? How is that different when the patient's satisfaction versus the treatment is taking priority?
Well, in my case, I think we're trying to implement both sides. So there's different tools being used to be able to quantify that data. For example, we have more of the clinical tool that all patients are completing prior to every visit. So then the provider has access to that information, and we're trying to see how that we can incorporate in our treatment plan. And basically just measuring progress. And then there's other surveys being sent to them that's measuring more of the satisfaction component. And then we get measured that way. They have something called MAP scores. So as providers, our patients pretty much, you know, take charge with that. If they're not happy with the surveys, they'll let us know, and then our scores, you know, drop. And then we have to kind of work on that with our patients and our management to try to increase those scores. And, you know, this is all new. This has just been implemented in the past year. So I think both the provider, management, the patients, we're all kind of going through that transitioning period right now.
What type of patients are we talking about from a standpoint of, are these adult patients, or is this also applied to children and minors who are able to participate? What is the satisfaction survey? Who completes them as part of this new policy?
Right now, as we stand, for minors, they're not completing the clinical component, but their parents can complete the satisfaction component. So parents are the driving force for minors in being able to complete these surveys and being able to say how satisfied they are with the service. But we pretty much serve a large number of adults at our facility. Adults pretty much are part of both, you know, measuring tools at this point.
Fantastic. What has the trend been since this has been such a new program for you both? Are we seeing an uptrend? Are we seeing a downtrend of how is this being able to progress, or is it still too new to tell those end results so we know how to measure whether it's working or not?
I personally believe it's still just in the starting phase. So I'm just waiting to see more time to pass to see kind of where it progresses, at least from my point of view as a provider. Carlos may have another point in administrative. What do you think?
Administrative, we've known this is since the passage of the Affordable Care Act. The antithesis has been that we have been relying a lot on government officials for the leading role in this, and what we found throughout the years is they're as lost as we are sometimes. And so what we're doing is we're taking a grassroots approach to things and saying anything and everything is on the table. And realizing that it's not really up to the government officials or government entities to set the standards. It's for us as providers and as organizations working with our patients and being advocates for them, that we can then set up these rules and regulations and measures and whatnot, that it comes from a place of understanding. I mean, in mental health, as opposed to physical health, you know, you may not, for an instance, you got a cold, okay, here's a course of treatment, you're cured after a while. Mental health, you could be in treatment for umpteenth years. I mean, we've had clients as much as 20 years in treatment. And so using that kind of a model, we also have to say, well, okay, there may be different sets of criteria for this kind of healthcare versus this kind of healthcare delivery. So it's not a one-size-fits-all, but it's in progress, and it's nice to finally see the funds coming in and the various different projects that states and the feds are doing to give extra funding for all these initiatives and to have all these pilot projects.
Well, I'm glad that you brought up the issue of cost, because it always comes down to whenever you enter into a discussion about any new programs and change is the correlation with cost. Are these new satisfaction surveys and this new patient-centric model translating into reduction in costs and a more efficient way of moving these programs forward as well?
In the beginning, it's a resounding no. It's costing more. Because right now, I would say in the next 5 to 10 years, the cost is increased because everyone's trying something new. The feds are trying something new. We're trying something new. The ultimate goal is towards maybe after a 5-10 year model is, yes, cost should go down because now we have models. Again, the hope is we develop models to where patients get the needed services, but that the cost issue is decreased. So I can share with you, when looking at my research, the U.S., as compared to its next, its next country that spends the most, which is France, and the difference between France and us is $900 billion. We spend $900 billion more on healthcare than the next country in the world does. And yet, our rates of living longer, more fruitful lives are one of the lowest in the world. So again, looking at different models of, well, do we look at, okay, what technologies can we use? Does the patient really have to come into the office? You know, do we do more community? Do healthcare providers themselves have to deliver the service? Are there other avenues? Could a nurse practitioner, could a community mental health worker help? So again, it's anything and everything is on the table because we realize that healthcare is a finite resource, but currently it's not being maximized and too much money is being thrown and yet there are no outcomes.
Well, and that is a big point that we've seen with a lot of businesses. I was excited about a conference I went to in April in Chicago where it was very curious that someone finally from stage made the comment, I don't understand why people are making decisions without having the data to drive the results to show them why something works or doesn't work. And to me, that seems such a common sense approach, is to be able to look at the results, see what's working, and then to move forward as opposed to simply throwing spaghetti against the wall and seeing what sticks. What do you think the future might hold as a result of these new models? Are you hopeful for one in particular, perhaps?
Yes. I mean, I think one of the things, again, looking at two different, the community, certified community behavioral health clinics, which just literally started this model, and again, only a few states, about seven, got selected. And what this model does, and it should start in June of 2017, so even though the Affordable Care Act passed in, 6 years ago now, it's taking this long for these models to come out. But in essence, it's saying, as a community mental health clinic, once the client comes in, you need to make sure the client's needs are met, everything, whether it be housing, whether it be job placement, in addition to their physical and mental health. So again, it's almost, I want to say, making it a one-stop shop for all clients' needs, because we realize the rate at when a client has a first encounter and then steps out of the door, and if they feel dissatisfied and not connected with the services, 75% of clients will not come back. So that perpetuates their illness, perpetuates them not seeking help. So if we can, at one location, literally saying, okay, client ABC here, you've got your mental health needs. Oh, I see you have an issue with housing. Hey, literally down the hall, go there. We'll do the referral. We'll connect you. So again, it's looking holistically at the patient, period. So making it a one-stop shop to where, all right, you've got your needs met. And that then therefore increases the chance of either curing or remitting your illness.
Well, it's wonderful to see such a holistic, integrated type of an opportunity. Jennifer, I'm assuming based on some of the things that these programs are doing, this is requiring far more training from a generalistic standpoint of knowing all of these other services that might need to be brought into the equation, as opposed to what training has been traditionally in a practitioner, at least into my understanding, is someone who's trained in just the mental health healing arts, such as the degrees in mental counseling, psychology, psychiatry, etc. Where is this extra training going to become to be able to help train these additional practitioners and all these other services that may be needed to be invited to the party, so to speak, like Kirillo's example?
Yeah, good point. We've actually been trying to advocate for those trainings because we're already noticing all the changes are being implemented. And, you know, we're trying to be, you know, good advocates and saying, hey, how are we going to provide quality care if we're not being trained? Because we're already incorporating like telehealth medicine. You know, we have psychiatrists doing like, you know, like Skype visits with our patients. So we want to be educated, and they're doing pilot studies. So now we're doing pilot studies more in the sense of how can we improve access to our patients? So how can we get them to come in more frequently? As we stand, where I work at Kaiser, they do offer 5 education days. So we get to select where we go to these trainings. So I'm trying for myself specifically getting, you know, that information through trainings, workshops, and trying to be able to kind of stay up to date with all the changes that are taking place so that I can, you know, better serve, you know, the patients that come in and see me every day.
And if I can interject, one of the things that that's a big kind of elephant in the room people don't talk about also with in regards to trainings and really the whole workforce placement is we're seeing huge shortages in the amount of new graduates that are looking to come into the mental health field. You're seeing an increase in physical health, but new graduates, I've seen data as looking that there has been a 50% decrease in the amount of new graduates for mental health professions in the last 5 years.
And what is the response of programs to address that decrease in providers of this care, I guess is the right way to say that?
So again, it's very new initiatives. Again, now for us in the organizations I've worked with and in my organization, we have strategic partnerships with a lot of the new universities. Again, there is that gap between what sometimes, unfortunately, school teaches and what the real world and the business world needs. So we're trying to bridge that gap to where we can give people a sense of, all right, this, if this is the profession you want to come into, here's your expectations. And we're finding we're getting an increase in the amount of people where we've done these co-occurring research programs where they're going to say, hey, yeah, this is exactly what I'm looking for. I know what to expect in the future. I know what kind of agency. I understand what my work will have an impact on. So it's getting there. It's just, again, in the beginning phases still.
Terrific. Well, as we bring this show to a close, I want to thank you both for joining us. Let's make sure that our listeners can get in touch with you both. Email, phone number, website, how can they reach you? Jennifer, we'll start with you.
Well, my email would be jen@jgurgis.com. So that's jen@jgurgis.com. And my newly found website would be drjenbrightheart.com.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. And Carlos?
Anyone can feel free to connect with me. My email is carlos@kgurgis.com. So it's KIRLOS@KGUERGUIS.com. And my website is psychvate.com.
Sounds wonderful. We want to thank our listeners for another 30 minutes of thought-provoking radio every Tuesday morning, and we'd like to thank our guests. And as we close every program, we'd like to give our guests one opportunity for one specific takeaway that our listeners should have after discussing this with you both and having you on the show today. Jennifer, what's the one thing you feel is the most important takeaway for our listeners from what our discussion is this morning?
To feel optimistic that all these changes that are taking place in healthcare are aimed, you know, to improve the care that we're providing, and specifically in healthcare and mental health care. So if there's ever a need for them to seek mental health services, that we are working to strive for the best so that they can, you know, hopefully come to us and feel that they're going to get what they need.
Sounds wonderful. And Carlos, your one takeaway for our listeners this morning?
My one takeaway would be for women in general to know that this is a time of disruption in the healthcare field, and it's a perfect time for them to take their skills and shine, and not to be dissuaded by unfortunate and irrational barriers they see, but to persevere. They're needed. They're severely needed in the healthcare organizations, and their uniqueness and the skill sets they bring to the table can only help healthcare organizations excel in this disruptive time.
Wonderful. We want to thank you both, Drs. Jennifer and Carlos Garris, for joining us this morning. My name is Dr. Cheryl Lentz, the academic entrepreneur. And as we like to always end our show, keep thinking your ways to success. We'll see you next Tuesday morning, and we look forward to having you with us. Thanks again for joining us, Dr. Jennifer and Carlos. Goodbye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.